You are listening to WPVMLP in Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7 on the dial, heard globally on WPVMFM.org, and on Alexa. Just tell Alexa to play WPVM Radio.
Learning to be a better listener of others is learning to listen to myself.
When we are listened to, truly listened to, you know, you can feel when someone's deeply listening and we feel heard, we are healed in that moment.
Listen and be heard. Even if your voice shakes without knowing it, you may be saving a stranger.
We listen and we be heard. This is important work. And we're all a part of it. Tell them who you are.
My name is Ricky Riccardi. I'm the director of research collections for the Louis Armstrong House Museum, Grammy winner, author, and anything that can be done to spread this great project. I'm all in.
Welcome to the Audio Garden, where we cultivate our collective wisdom, nurture creativity, and spread love. My name is Martha Senator, and this is Listen and Be Heard. Welcome back to the Audio Garden, my friends. It is so good to be here with you in this garden, a place to retreat for a moment, to enjoy peace and be able to contemplate what is going on around us. And sometimes when we leave the garden, it's to brace for a fight or to face what must certainly be faced. But while we're here, it's a chance to appreciate the beautiful things in life. I'm going to be welcoming the most beautiful of people, Carla Brundage, to the garden. Hernan will once again bring us new music that you will not hear anywhere else, this time a live recording from Smalls, and also from the archives, novelist Frida A. Poom will read a bit from the Gloomy Girl Variety Show. But first, a poem from Carla Brundage for her great-grandmother.
Great-grandmother Maud, hanging clothes in the summer, that's how I remember her. White sheets, yellow sun, hot Alabama shining, beating down on her, disguised behind the celebrating sky. Symphony of clouds, lemonade, and southern hospitality. They are billowing in the breeze, starched and white. She is in an apron, it is white, and her dress is yellow. Her long black hair is pulled back into a bun, but it keeps slipping out. And she uses her free hand to brush it back. Hair, sheets, white, black, billowing. She hums a love song, Dinah Washington. Hums to herself as she remembers, not her children or her job, not her husband. But she remembers last night, the sweetest shadow, the slightest sound, and the deepest pleasure in between these same sheets, which she is washing only because the evidence must be hidden. Her man, not the first or even the second. He is the young one, fiery and lovely from across the way. He is the one who is really going someplace. His skin is as black as, well, as black as the Alabama sky is blue. And his kisses are so hot that she shivers in the relentless sun. She is humming a tune that only a lady who flirts with death knows how to sing. And this is how I first remember her. The next memory is of her dead. There on those same sheets, laying on the ground with the laundry basket still on her hip as if stuck. Blood staining the sheets, red evidence of passing. Her throat is slit and her life seeps away into the ground in shame. A no good woman. Left to be remembered by no one. This is my great-grandmother, the woman no one spoke of for years, the woman who marked the beginning of what? I don't know.
Carla Brundage is founder of West Oakland to West Africa Poetry Exchange and author of 3 books of poetry, including the award-winning Blood Lies, Race Traitor. And here she is now at the Garden Gate.
I am so happy to welcome to the Audio Garden today my friend Carla Brundage, who is in Hawaii right now. And I know you from the Bay Area in the early 2000s, from the days of Listen and Be Heard Poetry Cafe. And wow, what have you been up to since then?
Oh, goodness. Well, since then, I have been working on several projects, 3 projects in particular. One is called Writers Across Oceans, which is a relaunching of West Oakland to West Africa. And I would say West Oakland to West Africa was sort of the beginning of this whole thing.
And so I had met you in Oakland, where you are from, but you spent many years in Hawaii, right?
Correct. Yeah. My family history and my kind of search for my roots is kind of deeply embedded in these projects. I was born in Berkeley, and then my parents moved to Hawaii when I was very young. And I grew up here as a teenager, however, having with a little intermediary, spending my middle school years back in Oakland and then living there after that. I've always sort of been rootless or felt rootless. I go back and forth between thinking I'm a person of the planet or I'm a person without roots. So what happened was, growing up in Hawaii, my mom was, you know, definitely an activist and always working in the Black community here in Hawaii, which is very small, but I'm mixed race. My dad is white and my mom is Black. She's from Alabama and he's from upstate New York. And so I guess I was always like, well, where do I fit? And so eventually I traveled to Africa thinking that that would be where I would find some kind of answer. And I did so kind of selfishly at that time, just kind of wanting to discover my own roots. I basically learned how much I didn't know about, I guess, my own lens of cultural understanding. I went to Zimbabwe, actually, and it was in 2001, and it was the year of Mugabe and his extreme. It was an extreme year. They had pulled out everyone from the embassy. And for some reason, I found myself there with my 7-year-old daughter. At that time, that I was convinced that shedding light on these like invisible tangibles, mm-hmm, like that connect us as humans, was a message that I had to bring. Because I went there looking for roots and everyone said to me, well, I was American. I go to Africa and then I'm American. People are like, I don't know why you're looking for roots here.
Interesting.
And I felt a little hurt.
Yeah. So you transferred that to connections. Am I hearing you?
Yeah, okay. I transferred that to connections because I made a lot of connections. To this day, there are so many people I met there. And I think back on it because I called that project Hawaii to Zimbabwe, which I never realized that 20 years later, I would go to Cote d'Ivoire, where I lived for 3 years. And that's where I started West Oakland to West Africa. And that was through meeting a poet there named Sir Black, who had the same vision as I. He worked with youth. He was bringing slam poetry to Ghana, and I was like, let's do an exchange. So when I got back to America, we started West Oakland to West Africa.
Wow. And are there archives?
Yeah, there's a website, westoaklandtowestafrica.com. And then what happened was, as a result of that exchange, I actually took about 50 people back and forth between, it expanded from Ghana to Nigeria to Kenya. We did poetry slams and we did 3 books. So there are 3 books that came out of that, published by Pacific Raven Press. One is called Black Rootedness, 50 Poets from Africa to America. The other one is called Our Spirits Carry Our Voices, which was Ghana. And then we have a third one called Sisters Across Oceans, which was Hawaii. That's when the journey back to Hawaii came, and it was a Hawaii-Ghana book.
Do you now have this program, Writers Across Oceans?
During the pandemic, my father passed away. And so I had been going back and forth to Hawaii quite often at that time. Also, we were suffering during the pandemic, not just from the pandemic, but from the fires and the floods. And the earth just seemed to be speaking in a way that reminded me of my connection to the earth, which was, I believe, the biggest gift Hawaii has given me, you know, being able to grow up here and feel so connected to the elements. I started to feel like this pull to come home, partly because of parents, but also because I was kind of missing the ocean and missing the flowers, literally. And so I can just remember one day I was at my mom's house and I was hemming and hawing about this decision. And she's like, well, why don't you go talk to the ocean? Mm. And I was like, okay. And this isn't the first time my mom has used that wisdom for me. What's interesting is being from Alabama, my mom does not swim. She grew up in segregated pools and, you know, she does not swim, but she knows me. So she's like, just go talk to the ocean. So I did. And the ocean told me, I stood there for hours. Like, it felt like hours. It was not hours. I stood there and it said, listen. That's all it said. Listen. And then like a little bit later, it said, call Nancy, which was bizarre because I hadn't thought of Nancy for a while.
We need to know who Nancy is.
So Nancy is a colleague that I worked with in Danville at the Athenian School when I was there. And she had moved to Kauai to teach. And Kauai is an island that I'm not connected to. I'm connected to Oahu in the Big Island and Maui a tiny bit. But I called Nancy and she said, oh, why don't you look into Hawaii Preparatory Academy? Long story short, I got a job. Mm-hmm. And I packed up and I moved back. And I had always had this dream of, on my dad's land, to create a retreat. It's almost all tropical rainforest with lehua flowers, and there's orchids there. And he built his whole kind of lean-to house kind of in the Thoreau style of everything is recycled. And I was like, this would be such a great place for writers. West Oakland to West Africa had plateaued in a way. The movement of the times was centering more on like keeping the community inward, Oakland for Oakland. And I was for that movement and I was ready to shift. So we're rebranding Writers Across Oceans with the vision of still keeping this idea of exchange. The first retreat will not be at my dad's land as it has a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
It will be Hawaii Preparatory where I work. It's focused on healing. It's focused on nature and is focused on quiet.
With a lens of a writing practice.
Yes, with a writing practice.
You are a published poet of several books. What does that mean to you to have a healing retreat for writers?
When I sought permission to do this project here, the first question that arose was about land and indigenous rights and my own both connection and lack of connection, not being indigenous Hawaiian myself, to the land. And so it became kind of a complicated thought process. Like, what is the gift that we can give to the land? And what is the gift that the land gives to us? And then how does that inform our own creativity? That's the underlying philosophy of the retreat. The Big Island is a really unique place. There's a rainforest, and then there's a volcano always actively, well, right now, for the past year, actively spewing lava. In the Hawaiian mythology, we have Pele, who creates the lava, and we have her sister, Hi'iaka, who creates the rain. And when the rain hits the lava, land is formed. And it's this idea that creation and destruction exist simultaneously. And a lot of artists are really disheartened, myself being one of them, in the current political environment where there seems to be a really strong push towards destruction from all sides. Tear down what isn't working and then build up what is, what can work. And so I think that is the connection to the writing, is to feel like held by place, held by this idea of community, held by this idea of like really strong, smart teachers who can guide you through this and then deepen your practice, as opposed to, as some people share, like give up your practice out of dismay or distress or feel silenced.
I think sometimes writers feel also like, does this really matter? Like, does it make a difference? Or why am I doing this when maybe I should be out in the street? So those are all things we need to
consider and just hear those voices in ourselves asking those questions. And then,
yeah,
I guess it's helpful. Well, I don't guess. It is helpful to work those things out in community and not just try to figure it all out inside your own head.
Yeah, I think hearing the voices of others also reminds. When I hear someone say something that resonates with me, I grow a little bit inside. You know, I heal inside and I remember, oh, it is worth it. You know, it is worth it to listen and be heard.
I'm Tony Robles, co-host of Listen and Be Heard. This is Listen and Be Heard Radio.
You mentioned your mother's from Alabama. You do work in Alabama as well. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'm coming into this belief of a spiritual path that I'm on. And again, this move back to Hawaii enabled me to have more time to think about this. Recently, I wrote a book, Blood Lies, Race Traitor. And in that book, I was looking at this word mulatto, but I was also looking at how language, like the fundamentals of language, even a word can shift a thought. That was kind of part of the book, focusing on mulatto, but also other words used to oppress. And I spent a lot of time researching my mom's first cousin. His name is Sammy Young Jr. He was a member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. And in 1966, the year before I was born, he was shot and killed by a gas station attendant named Marvin Segrest. Can't really explain it, but that murder was so, it was a small, tight-knit community, and it really tore the community apart. And so now, 60 years later, there's a group, the Sammy Young Jr. Legacy Committee, who's trying to commemorate his death. And I'm part of that committee. And in this very strange turn of events, it was almost unbelievable. I'm on the committee and I get an email that a woman named Mab Segrest is donating $5,000 to our cause. And I wrote a little snarky note back, like, because Mab Segrest is a relative of the murderer, Marvin Ryan Segrest. So I wrote a little snarky note like, well, at least she's paying reparations. Little did I know she is paying reparations. Mab Segrest is a white anti-racist activist. The killing of Sammy Young changed her life and caused her to write her own book called Memoir of a Race Traitor.
Wow.
Self being a white woman who sees herself as a race traitor. And my book, Blood Lies, Race Traitor, connected us. So.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
What does that say to you about your work? I mean, that's really affirming in a lot of ways, right? That what you're doing really is meaningful, that it touches people. As a writer and an activist, you're accomplishing that through writing. Maybe even if it's not didactic writing, you're still conveying something that touched this woman who also had this deeply traumatic experience from the same event.
Yeah. Yeah, because we all have doubt, right? We all have doubt. And then if we listen, you know, there's like some kind of heart path that we try and follow, you know, if we can, if life allows us to. It does affirm that for me, because there have been a lot of times where I wonder, like, why did I leave Oakland? Oh, I miss the community, you know, or who am I and who am I to do this and that and the other? And so we actually did a healing circle in Tuskegee last March, and it was incredible how many people came out. Bab was the only white woman in the room. My mother, who was totally devastated, like her life really changed after Sammy was killed. She has no brothers or sisters. And I mean, my quest to bring healing due to the death of Sammy has started since I was a child. Even when I was 7, there's a book written about Sammy by James Forman. And there's a picture of him like lying in the ground dead, with blood coming out of his head. And I was obsessed with that picture. Alabama dirt. Never tasted Alabama soil. Phloem clay, it's the dust I'm made of. Sweet tomatoes, Uncle Sam bowed under the sun, gently handles a small fruit. So few men in my family line live. Family secret buried in denials. Sammy lives in a pool of my mind,
golf club in Hand of Blood. I call my mom on the phone to ask about vigilante justice in the segregated South. We don't talk about that. But was there justice, I ask? Time follows no rules, and gunshots still deafen. As a child, I was obsessed with a black and white photo. I'd hide in the corner of my mind and go over it. Lay in the bed with Sammy Young Jr., dreaming him to smile. What made him decide to fight his battle alone at night in Macon County, after participating always as part of a team? You had emotional problems, Mother says, back then. I just did not want to talk about it. All the things she does not want to talk about. My emotional problems, she calls them. Images of blood still pooling on black cement. Imagined weapon, justification for death. Was it in his beautiful head that they found the bullet? College-educated brains shot out for being hot-headed, uppity. Ripples of this one death penetrate generations. And here I am, still swallowing pills.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah.
So that's making it happen in Tuskegee that you're involved in, and that's the very heartfelt root of the whole thing right there. And people can go to Macon, as in M-A-C-O-N, Macon, Alabama, Making It Happen in Tuskegee, oneword.org. And the, while we're at it, the address for the other one is writersacrossoceans.com. But in the little time we have left, we also want to talk a bit about Tar Baby. What is Tar Baby?
Oh, so Tar Baby is a new magazine sponsored by Toni Morrison Foundation. And I've been blessed in my life to have met Ishmael Reed, who was kind of a co-founder of that. And I worked with him before during the exchange project of West Oakland to West Africa. His vision was to elevate African voices. And first we did Conch, Kenya. And then when they started, he and Ford Morrison started Tar Baby. They asked if I could be a guest editor for a Ghana issue. And so Tar Baby has a mission, which I think I should read. It's a journal dedicated to amplifying diverse voices, fostering critical discourse and celebration of the rich tapestry of global arts and ideas. And so it's a new literary journal, and it's quite beautiful.
It is quite beautiful. I'm looking at it now at tarbaby.com. And, you know, you can click on it and read some of it and purchase the PDF and read through the whole thing.
Once it's heard, it can't be unheard. Once it's published, it's not going to be unpublished. Once you read the poem, you can't unread it. No matter how an individual may try to push it to the side, forget about it, it's still in there. And it's the words, the meaning, the feelings behind it are taking root in their psyche, and they can't get rid of it.
I feel like my family is filled with complicated relationships about race, and as we are increasingly racially divided and lines, hard lines, are being drawn, sometimes I worry. I want to say, no, I'm not a race traitor, I'm not. And then I think, like, what is a race traitor? It does bring to mind this idea of how words impact us as humans and how valuable they are and how valuable it is to be able to be free in speech.
Thank you so much, Carla, for joining me here in the Audio Garden today. I've mentioned all of these website addresses, writersacrossoceans.com, and there's Making It Happen in Tuskegee, which I think is .org, and there's tarbaby.com, and you also have your own personal writer's website, which is carlabrundage.com.
Yeah.
And but how would you like people to get in touch with you, or is there anything else that you would like to put out there?
Oh, I would. Well, I would love for you to come experience the retreat. Please go to Writers Across Oceans if you're interested.
And that's in June, right?
It's in June. Yeah, June 9th through 14th. Yes, I would love that. And there's an email there. Yeah. And also, please just kind of check out Tar Baby. It's a great magazine. Can't lose by checking it out.
Thank you for that. And we'll have links to all of that on the post for this episode at listenandbeheard.net. Thank you so much for joining me today, Carla.
Thank you so much, Martha. And thank you for inviting me. It was really, really wonderful to talk to you.
I hear the phrase listen and be heard. It takes me to thinking about some of those principles of the community organizing, right? And that it should be an exchange, right? It makes me think of the conversation around stuff like mutual aid, right? Like It should be something that we're here to know each other. And to do that, one has to listen, but one also has to be heard, right? So you have to, one, build that confidence in yourself to be able to say the things that you're feeling or thinking, right? And hope that the folks around you are open to that.
To listen and be heard should be a mantra that we are embracing as poets right now.
I think listen and be heard can be both a literary thing, but it's also about relationship. People feel absolutely alone when they are not heard and they cannot hear others. So the power to hear and to listen is fundamental in being toward intimate with someone else. Intimacy is also the key to literature because only the heart can speak to the heart.
Only the heart. That was Andrew Lamb, who you will find in our Season 3 archives here on the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network. Coming up, a live recording you will not hear anywhere else, featuring our own Aranon with John Medeski, Chase Smith, and Nick Dunstan, live at Smalls in New York City. Please stick around, listen to the sounds of the Audio Garden, and I'll meet you on the other side of the bridge in a minute or two.
Hey, what's happening? This is Hernan Ramiro, formerly known as Jay Rodriguez, for Listen and Be Heard Network. Thank you so much always to Martha Senator for bringing it to us every week. The music I'm going to be featuring today is going to be really great. It's a very rare recording of myself and John Modesky on piano and Chez Smith on drums and Nick Dunstan on bass. Live at Smalls playing Billy Preston's You Are So Beautiful. Dedicated to all the beautiful things in humanity, all our people, and putting good energy and vibes for world peace in the Middle East and everywhere within ourselves. Hope for long-lasting truth and justice in this world. And you have heard throughout this show the great Hasan Kasai, one of the greatest masters of the Persian-Iranian and blown flute of the 20th century. Basically, he did what John Coltrane did for the people, one of the central figures in modern Iranian classical music. Very beautiful, heartfelt, dedicated to our people in Iran and for world peace. Because there sure is a better way to make this world a better place. And the way it's going is not the way I believe it should be. And I think many people feel the same way. All right. Let's keep the light and music going. Peace out.
This is the Listen and Be Heard Hour, brought to you by Listen and Be Heard Network, a project of Sound System Culture.
Listening to? Is that you? I hear whispering and someone's here. Is that me? Hurting what's listing in the belly of a ship, dipping, slipping in a storm, while you pretend it's the norm? And I'm listening to the thought that I ought to let go of the ship and slip into the sea. And watch me slowly sink into memories where the only light is manufactured by the creatures of the depths, finding ways to be fed, being led among dead beings, seeing light as heaven, while breathing water, thinking stars and cars and Mars and you could have gone so far, but you weren't the one. And fun is as does, was, never, and run from a fight. Keep light at your back, hack your way to pay to play. What I am to listening, hear what was you, was me, he, she, they, then. What am I? Listening to you. They listened while heard I was wasing, list, listing.
It is 2020. I wake in the morning and turn the television on. Pause on Flavor of Love. I've been watching reruns of it over the past week. In the first episode, Public Enemies, Flavor Flav, knights his adoring fans and potential lovers with cheeky nicknames like Smiley and New York, Thing One and Thing Two, and Goldie. I watched this episode for what might be the second or third time, years after its original airing. I imagine Flavor Flav draping a large cloth around my neck. Here you go, crying, he says before shouting. Flavor Flav. Flavor Flav is a master of ceremonies, as am I. He's a hype man, someone who gets the crowd excited. Our similarities might end there. After my partner and I moved in together in the summer of 2019, I found out he hates reality television. For an odd match, considering MTV's Laguna Beach and Game Show Network baggage are among my favorite cookday TV shows. He disliked the voyeurism of watching others' strong and complex emotions on screen. I am, for some reason, fine with it. But he loves Hawaiian pizza, so clearly his taste is up for debate. I wonder what it would be like to be on reality television. I imagine a room full of black women, all of us crying, therapy think piece after think piece written about what should change about our society, the thoughts and prayers of the media worlds before we move on to the next news cycle. But maybe the producers would be congregating in the corner. Did you catch that? This is bold. In Heather Crystal's The Crying Book, she writes, "People cry out of fatigue, but how horrible is it to hear someone say she's just tired? Tired, yes, certainly, but just, there's nothing just about it." I read Hamisa Durakib's poem, "How Can Black People Write About Flowers at a Time Like This?" I've always known what a time like this is. The latest illness, the failing economy, the police death, the stolen children. It isn't news to me. I disconnect myself from the insects that come to kill off my garden because I am tired. Audibly and visibly tired. I feel that someday this feeling will bury me. I think of Brittany C. Cooper and tiredness. Tiredness might not be an emotion, but it is affect. I feel it, I sense it, it exists on the surface of my skin and underneath, and it contours my relationships.
Just kept saying women have been so patient. I was offended at first, but I thought, wait.
Is that true?
Well, superpower. Whatever it is that we hold is in the face of the world as patience, but it's some kind of something else that allows us to do what we do, and that is to hold all the sacred waters, to give life, to create miracle, to continue. And I think it's beyond the words patient. Patience.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. Because patience implies it's almost like martyrdom or something.
Exactly.
Where I think it's more like silence in the face of not wasting your precious energy. That's not patience, right? That's something else. Thank you, all of you, for bringing your precious energy here to the Audio Garden today. That was a little tidbit of conversation between myself and my co-host on Beyond Borders, Judy DeLogan, and the episode that's up right now, we're calling it Auntie's Table. It was just me and her talking for an hour at Auntie's Table about women and medicine and feminism and abolition and food sovereignty, among many other things. And I invite you to join us at the table. You could find the complete archives, including the current episode, number 5 of season 2 of Beyond Borders, at listenandbeheard.net. And before that, we heard Frida A. Poom, author of the Gloomy Girl Variety Show on Feminist Press. And I spoke to her in season 3 of the Listen and Be Heard Hour. So if that piqued your interest, you can find the entire conversation and more information about her and her book, along with Carla's books and all the publications she mentioned. And thanks again to Carla Brundage for joining me here in the Audio Garden. All the books that we talk about, that we ever talked about on the Listen and Be Heard Hour, Beyond Borders, are on a master reading list at listenandbeheard.net. So if you're trying to decide what to read next, maybe you would like to go and put a few of the books we've talked about on your to-be-read list. We had a blizzard, and my garden was buried in about a foot and a half of snow. And then there were a few days where it started to melt, and I actually went out there and shoveled the melting snow onto my beds so that my beds could soak up that water as it melts instead of it all running down the drain. So hopefully those beds will be saturated in the springtime, ready to have beautiful things sprouting out of them. But right now it looks like I'm growing cardboard inside the raised beds, which I created partially from paving brick and partially from takeout containers. The best thing about my activities outside was just being outside and feeling the elements and working alongside Mother Nature. I don't have all the answers. I may not have any answer, but I think the ultimate answer is to work with Mother Nature for peace and prosperity for everyone, every last child and woman and man. I'm going to leave you with the wise words of the author of Agricultural Resilience. If you're looking for some practical ways to set about making changes where you are, you need some lists. Laura Langnick is good for that, including rules for resilience.
The second rule is regional self-reliance. So set up the food system so that it has a very little requirement for outside water, energy, materials from outside the region.
Support. The Listen and Be Heard Network and Sound System Culture, that Inc., so that we can keep on bringing you this beautiful music and these beautiful statements and giving our people in our community all around the world a voice that they may heal and grow and inspire. All right now, all the best. Peace out.
Thanks as always to Davian Dial at WPVM Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, for introducing Listen and Be Heard to the broadcast airwaves, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, KEPJ in San Antonio, Texas, KHOI in Ames, Iowa, and KFOI in Red Bluff, California, and other stations that are part of the Pacifica Affiliate Network for cultivating the audio garden in your communities, and our own Listen and Be Heard Network, host of WLBH.org. Please visit us at listenandbeheard.net and sign up for our email newsletter and at our Listen and Be Heard YouTube channel, where you will find unedited video interviews of our featured guests. My name is Martha Senator, and I want to thank you for listening and giving me the opportunity to be heard.
Lonesome, Henri and me.